Hi, my name is Frankie. Thank you for listening to Two My Mom. I never listen.
I'm telling you what, that Frankie, my son, he's a piece of work. He is a handful, and it is true. He does not listen. Not just to the podcast. He doesn't listen in general. So anyway, this is Debbie Antonelli, Nothing But Net. Thank you so much for joining our podcast. We're so excited to have so many new listeners and new people that are sharing their passion and love for the game with us. So one of the segments on our show is Ask Antonelli, and we've had some questions that have come in through Twitter. Obviously, this is a big week, and hashtag Ask Antonelli or Antonelli, askantonelli@gmail.com are two ways that you can get to me. And I would love to hear your questions. We had a couple of questions this week that came in. Number one, what's my AP poll? And what does my top 10 look like? Well, here's the thing about my AP poll. I've been voting in this poll for, I think this is my 12th or 13th year. And I take it very seriously. And as we know, everything we do is subjective. However, when I put a team somewhere or I put them in the poll or I don't put them in the poll, I usually have a pretty good reason why. And it's not just a standalone, this team's one, this team's two. I look at the big picture. I evaluate what they have coming back. I evaluate what I think their question marks are. Usually we evaluate schedule. This year it's really challenging to do that. But anyway, there's a lot of variables that go in. There's no particular guideline that one person has to follow over another. And it is a subjective, collective vote. But here's my vote. And here's how I feel about week number three of the AP poll. First of all, I moved Stanford to number one. I think Stanford was, they were number two in my poll last week. I moved them up to number one. They have depth on the front line. They've got quality scoring one through five. I love their pace and cadence. I think they're on track for a special year. I have them at one. I moved Louisville from number four to number two. I have Louisville at number two because I think they have one of the best backcourts in America. And guard play dictates tempo and scoring ability. If you don't have good guards, it's really challenging to play all facets of the game. And Louisville has, and Dana Evans, and Haley Van Lith, and Kiana Smith, one of the best perimeters in the country. Now, DePaul plays a style in that game that Louisville scored 116 points. DePaul plays a style that's full court, pressing 94 feet, and they play it a majority of the game. Well, that opens up the court for Louisville, who likes to play fast, who has an attack mentality on the top of the floor. And you've got guards that can break off a set at any point and make a play. Dana Evans, Haley Van Lith, and Kiana Smith can all do that for Jeff Walls. So I have Louisville as the number two team. Number three, I have at NC State. Now, last week, I had NC State at number six. So I already had them higher in my poll than the AP poll itself. I moved them from six to number three because, come on, y'all, they went on the road and they beat the number one team. Now, you can say the game was ugly, it wasn't played well. I totally respect Dawn Staley's comments post-game about how her team looked uncoachable and untamable because this time of year, coaches are worried about their team. They're not so much worried about other teams. This is a unique and different year. But NC State went in there and beat the number one team. NC State, if you heard me say this earlier on previous podcasts, is already better than they were last year. And I said that after the first game of the year that I called when they played North Florida. Jada Boyd was not in the lineup for South Carolina game. Kayla Jones for NC State is a senior and a three-year starter. Yes, her role has been adjusted a little bit to get Jada Boyd on the court. Yes, it's a terrific coaching decision by Wes Moore, but even better buy-in by a senior in Kayla Jones who wants to win. If you watched NC State last year, it's shocking that this is her first double-double because she is such an important component. She shoots the three around Elisa Cunane. She gives them space. She rebounds, plays with a high IQ. I'm not surprised that she had a big game, and I actually had her on my list for breakout players this season. So in the ACC, no one surprised at Kayla Jones' ability to help NC State get that big win. Number four is South Carolina. I moved South Carolina from number one to number four. The reason why South Carolina is number four is because I think they're a top four team. I think they're one of the best teams. I think they will be there at the end. And the big controversy that I'm hearing out in social media and a lot of conversation I've had with some of my colleagues and some coaches is, what do you do with UConn? Unfortunately, UConn has been on pause because of COVID. They were number three in my poll. So I did jump Louisville and NC State and Stanford up in my poll. And I moved South Carolina to four and I put UConn at five. I think that is where they should be right now until they play. And I've said this before on the podcast, UConn is not going to lose a Big East game for 4 or 5 years. So when you look at their schedule, it's still the same for them, playing Baylor, Tennessee, no longer playing Notre Dame, but no longer playing Louisville. So the number of opportunities for UConn to play high-level competition have shrunk for them. And unfortunately for all of women's basketball, not just UConn, you know, we like to see the best teams play against the best. So that's my top five right now. And I'll even take it one more step. I'll give you number six, because if you're paying attention and watch the polls, you can go and look at what all the poll voters vote and where they put teams. But I have Texas A&M at number six, and that's moving them up from number seven last week. So I already had them very high and in the top 10. And you know what? I'm going to keep going, because Arizona's at seven. Oregon, I moved up to number eight. Arkansas, I moved from number 16 to number nine because of the way they handled Baylor, the way they played in the Gulf Coast Showcase. I love the way Mike Nabor's team plays on the offensive end. They keep the pressure on offensively with their threes and their ability to get to the free throw line. If you can keep the pressure on with your offense, you don't need to have as much pressure with your defense, just because they're so capable of scoring and getting points per possession every time down the floor. Number 10, I put Baylor. I watched the South Florida game. Baylor's still trying to figure it out. Will they be there at the end? Yes, they will. Their size, their length, and Kim Mulkey's big game experience will absolutely matter. So there's my top 10 in the AP poll. Another question we got on askantonelli@gmail.com was about the number one pick. Now that we've had the WNBA lottery and we've had a chance to see that New York is going to get back-to-back number one picks. Last year, Sabrina Ionescu did not get to play in game three. I was actually on the call of that game when she hurt her ankle at midcourt after she made a phenomenal play on both ends of the floor. We will be happy to see her back healthy and 100%. And she is working out and she is gearing up. So that's good news for all of us. But I think for New York, one of the things to consider, because they had the worst record in the league in the WNBA, is they're going to have to make some moves in the offseason. And their offseason moves will probably give us a good indication of who will be the number one pick. Who do I think could be the number one pick? I think Dana Evans has an opportunity to be the number one pick. I think she has shown her ability to play off the ball early. We know what kind of quicks she has, and they don't have, New York doesn't have anybody with her kind of quickness with the ball in their hands. Sabrina Ionescu and Leisha Clarendon will most likely be the starting backcourt for them, but they need somebody that can give them an explosive player on both ends of the floor. And obviously Dana Evans made 93s last year, was ACC Player of the Year, is very capable of shooting with range, scoring off the bounce, and playing off the ball. We've seen Jeff Walls move her around. But we also know with the ball in her hands, she's got weapons around her this year to distribute, and I think she's playing at a very high level early. The other player I think has a really good chance of being the number one pick is Ryan Howard from Kentucky. Last year, better than 23 points a game. This year, I've seen her handle the ball more on the top of the floor. I've seen her initiate offense. I know how good she is in the two-man game. I'm not sure there's many that can accelerate off-screening action and get their feet set behind the three-point line as quickly as she can. And she does all this with size. And I do believe she has another level to her game. this year, what I have appreciated about watching her is she plays the game with great tempo and pace. She knows when to turn on her quickness and to utilize her length, but she also has good command over possession basketball. And if she's going to play on the top of the floor, that means that Kyra Elzy really trusts her to make decisions. And if you've got size and you can make decisions with a ball in your hands, I think that makes you a good combination for potentially being the number one pick to play alongside Sabrina Ionescu in New York. So those are a couple of questions we got from askantonelli@gmail.com. Please send me your questions or hit me up on social media, #AskAntonelli. There's lots of ways you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for the username @NBN with DA. That would be @NBA with DA. That's Nothing But Net with Debbie Antonelli. You can send us your email, send us your questions, and please listen and subscribe to Nothing But Net with Debbie Antonelli. You can go to all the places that you normally listen, or you can go to our Linktree link. That's Linktree link, and you can find our podcast there. So please subscribe. Tell your friends about it. We're going to have a lot of fun this season covering the game. I'm so thrilled today to bring to you Jim Garofalo. He's the Executive Vice President for Sports and Marketing in North America for Kinexon. If you want to know what Kinexon is, it's the safety tag contact tracing system that has allowed college sports to be played. It is incredible what this technology has allowed all of us to enjoy. Because if you like basketball, then you need to hear this interview with Jim. What a gentleman, what a great innovator in our game, and we are thankful that he was able to join Nothing But Net with Debbie Antonelli. Take a listen. Here's Jim. As promised, Nothing But Net with Debbie Antonelli continues to roll on. And today's guest, we've got Jim Garofalo. He's the Executive Vice President of Sales and Marketing in North America for Kinexon. Jim, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Debbie. Thanks for having me. It's great to meet you.
It's great to meet you. Man, you are the buzz right now. I mean, everyone's talking about Kinexon, and explain your technology. Tell the fans how it works. I know a lot of people want to know what's going on with all this contact tracing in the middle of a pandemic, and yet you found a way to help us be able to play college sports.
Yeah, it's actually been quite amazing. I think that when we all set out on this journey back in March, I think we had a vision for where we wanted to go with our current technology and start to bring it to life in the college landscape, but also in pro sports. And you know, thankfully we had a technology we worked on that we were able to adapt and bring to life for, you know, as you mentioned, for contact tracing and proximity sensors. And really, we were really surprised of how well it was bought into and how quickly it's kind of caught on to not only the professional landscape, but also in the college landscape as well.
So Jim, you're going to talk about technology that some of us aren't going to have any idea, but if you could put it in terms like this, flip phone to smartphone, we might be able to understand what you mean.
Yeah. So our technology works with sensor to sensor recognition, right? So if I have a sensor on and you have one on, Debbie, what our technology can do is tell Jim's sensor was within 6 feet of Debbie's sensor, and we were in contact with each other for 5 minutes, 6 minutes, 4 minutes, and it'll log that individual contact. So throughout the course of a practice or a game, two athletes will be coming in contact with each other. And as we know, that 6 foot of contact, 15 minutes of duration is a very important number that athletic departments and medical professionals are looking at. So what it's going to do is it's going to log those contacts between us and between our teammates or opponents or officials, and it's going to be able to accumulate all that information, and at the end of a game, at the end of a practice session, the medical professional that's associated with an individual school or a team would be able to go in, take a look at that data, and then be able to accurately tell if I have an athlete that may be at risk based off someone that may have tested positive. So really, It's not about location. We're not kind of tracking every movement of where an athlete is or GPS type of technology here. It's really sensor to sensor activity. And then what that duration, what that contact intensity looks like. So time and duration, the two individuals are in contact with each other.
So most teams have this sensor built into their uniforms somehow, and you have to share information between the two schools as well. Is that correct? How does that work?
Yeah, so that you're right. A lot of our teams have been sewing like little pockets in their jerseys or on their shorts that they will insert our sensor in. And our sensor is quite small, actually. I always have one here by me, but the sensor is about that size. So it's a size of a domino, really, that they'd take it out of a charging tray, put it into their uniform, and then it's going to be actively looking for other tags to interact with. Now, you're right. We do have to have some coordination between conferences to be able to have, you know, tags talk to each other. But, you know, that's been off and rolling now, and we've had really good success. So, you know, after a particular game, whether it be, you know, like this past weekend, Georgia Tech and Kentucky, those two after a game can go back and look at not only the information that they have for their own athletes and the contacts that took place, but if there was any contact across teams as well, and really be able to, you know, be a good partner in this whole thing, right? We all know that we're kind of in an unprecedented time, and to be able to share that information that, hey, sensor number two that was a positive test post game, do the appropriate contact tracing on your side of things, on the opponent side of things, if there is something that happened to come in contact for that length of time that was at that would prove that they wouldn't be at risk.
Jim, obviously your ingenuity and your creativity is on display here, right? I mean, I don't want to be so dramatic as to say that you saved college sports this year, but I think you did save college sports in some ways, because through the CDC and through all the NCAA and the conferences and everything that you've signed agreements with, you had to have some measure of confidence to know that this was going to actually allow us to play. How did some of those conversations go without, you know, calling out any particular league or anything?
Well, I would love to take credit for all this, but I think we have an amazing team of engineers and developers that are at our home, at our headquarters in Germany, that took what was being used for performance technology. I mean, we have a very strong background in monitoring athlete performance, whether it be speeds, accelerations, those type of things that NBA athletes, college athletes are looking at on a day in and day out basis. And they were able to take that same technology and make the changes to make it applicable for what we're dealing with now. I would say that, you know, we felt really confident in the solution that we had and what it could deliver. I think it takes a really innovative partners and people that are really concerned with the health and safety of their athletes and to bring college sports and pro sports back. And the credit goes to them. Like, we had a technology that we could prove worked and was going to deliver information efficiently and the way it should be delivered. But then it also takes, you know, commissioners and medical task force and athletic trainers and team doctors and strength conditioning coaches that are all looking at this data, and they want their athletes to be safe. So it takes some coordination from those individuals to really buy into what are the ways that we're going to keep our athletes the safest when they're on court. And we all want college sports. We all want pro sports. I think as much as anybody, we want to see everybody back on the court safely. But I think really when it comes down to us showing what the technology can do, it's really kind of the backing of these professionals that are across these conferences and pro leagues that really bought into what it can deliver and how it can keep their athletes safe.
We're getting to spend some time with Jim Garofalo, the Executive Vice President of Sales and Marketing in North America for the Kinexon technology that is what we would call in layman's terms the contact tracing that allows us to actually be able to play. Jim, you've got a great team. Obviously, your engineers are way ahead of and advanced, and you also have incredible leadership skills to be able to communicate a message, to get some of the other respective leaders in college sports to be able to make a decision and take a risk in some ways. How did you sell it?
Well, it's funny. I appreciate that. I think that, you know, as these were coming about, I think that, you know, teams started to feel like they had parts of the equation figured out, right? Like testing protocols, although they're not easy, they were able to start to figure those out. And then as they were starting to go, they realized that there was a gap in this information. And I think what really unlocked it for me and the story that we were talking about a lot as we were going through is we were hearing stories of people sitting in front of computer screens or video screens for hours on end with a stopwatch and trying to identify athlete A came in contact with athlete B, and here's the exact time that was there. We were able to show them a solution that really, by putting two sensors on an athlete and then putting them back into a charging tray and an upload a format where they can upload that information afterwards relatively quickly, and that automates that entire process for them. I think with all the other things that had to be added to, you know, this regular, you know, what I call this new normal college basketball season or college football season, with all those things that were added to the individuals on these staffs, I think having something that was going to create an automated process to do this for them was something that, you know, was really attractive to these conferences. So, you know, it started with, you know, I think it's been well documented. We worked with the bubble in Orlando. We've done some stuff here with the NFL to start this year. And then really our college exposure started with the SEC. And from there, you know, they brought it to life from a college football perspective and rolled it for basketball. And now since then, you know, the Pac-12, the Missouri Valley, the ACC, the Big 12 are all people now that are trusting us to use this technology and help deliver, you know, fast information to keep their athletes safe.
You got to love Greg Sankey and the SEC and the commissioner for, you know, trying to figure out a way. He was constantly through the entire pandemic discussion early on about would college football happen, always trying to find a way. I know you love sports. Do you have a favorite team? What'd you do growing up?
Well, I'm the son of an athletic trainer, and my dad worked for the Chicago Cubs when I was a kid. So I grew up a Cubs fan, and, you know, being here in the suburbs of Chicago, you know, Cubs and Blackhawks obviously were right there. But I'm a Wisconsin Badger, so I live and breathe Badger athletics, and I was really excited to see them getting back on the field finally after a little bit of pause here. But I'm a huge Badger fan, but that doesn't take away from now I'm becoming more and more of a fan across all these conferences, because I have so much respect for what the commissioners are doing, what the individual athletic directors and all the individuals to get these athletes back on the field. So I think it's turned into a deeper appreciation across the NCAA landscape than you really had before that, all of this, just to see all the work they're putting in to keep everybody safe.
If I may humbly say, and I am in no position to say this, but thank you on behalf of college athletics. As a former athlete myself and someone who loves basketball and has been working in the game for 30 plus years, I hate to even tell you how long, it's really remarkable to think that there's technology out there that can actually allow us to play. And then as a mom, to know that my kid is safe. That's another thing that I think is really important. So what's next? Like this, we're going to have a virus. I mean, excuse me, we're going to have a vaccine for the virus. And when we get the vaccine for the virus, I know there's got to be something next for you that you're thinking that doesn't give up a patent or anything that you're out there on. But I can just imagine you've got some ideas.
Yeah. I mean, I think we know that the reality of all this, there's going to be some, you know, some time into the first half of next year where we're continuing to make sure that we're keeping everyone safe during competition. But you're right, there has to be a point for us where we start to look now, what's that pivot back to our core, right? So, you know, really now what we've had the chance to learn, the people that we've had a chance to meet as part of all this, you know, unfortunately, with the situation we all were in, we came up with a solution here that entered, you know, fortunately and unfortunately, right? We had to deal with what we were kind of faced with here, but it also opened up a lot of opportunities for us to meet a lot of people across the NCAA landscape now that are introduced to Connexon and the technology and what it can deliver, right? So now there is a real opportunity for us to really continue to emphasize what we can do from a performance side of it. So now we've had a chance to keep them safe from a COVID and kind of return to play protocol. But now what can we do to deliver a performance solution that's going to keep their athletes safe and continuing to improve from a performance perspective? So we see a real opportunity there, you know, continuing to do what we've done really well now for 4 or 5 years on the NBA side of things in college basketball. And we see a lot of growth opportunities in that side of it. And we've got some big plans, and we're really, I think we're really fortunate to have unlocked an opportunity like this and give people a solution that has really, I think, helped kind of get them back and going here.
Well, Jim, I'm a fan of what you're doing. I hope that when you launch the next level of your technology, that you'll be able to come back and tell us what you got going on. And you're always welcome anytime. And we might just get you on here just to talk a little Badger basketball one day.
Yeah, I would absolutely love that and really appreciate you reaching out to us. I think the more people that are shining a light on you know, what athletic departments are doing and college conferences are doing to really keep their athletes safe. So I think it really just helps hammer home how important these student athletes are to what's going on in the college athletics landscape currently.
Thank you so much, Jim. Jim Garofalo, the Executive Vice President for Sales and Marketing in North America of the Connexon Technology. Jim, thanks so much for joining Nothing But Net with Debbie Antonelli.
Thanks so much, Debbie. I appreciate it. Stay safe.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll catch you next time.